The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We are live on this Friday, January 20th, and I was thinking you might need a pick-me-up. Today's a hard day for a lot of people, including me. And so I wanted to bring on a guest I've been trying to get on my show for a really long time. And we're live, so you can call and talk to us if you're not that sad. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. Let me tell you about today's guest. Jen Richards is a writer and actress, as well as a consultant and advocate who works with national organizations and media projects. She is the co-writer, star, and producer of the Emmy-nominated series, Her Story, co-producer of the upcoming docu-series, More Than Tea, and writer of its accompanying Trans 102 series. She's also a 2016 Outfest Screenwriting Fellow for her feature script, Any Given Week. And she will be appearing in several upcoming projects on network television, including CMT's Nashville and CBS's Doubt. Jen was a series regular on E's I Am Kate, featured in Logo's Beautiful as I Want to Be and AOL's True Trans with Laura Jane Grace, and has appeared in several videos for BuzzFeed, OWN, and After Ellen. She has published essays on multiple platforms, and she wrote the 2015 September-October cover story, What Trans Movement? For The Advocate. And she's actually live in person in the Sex Out Loud studios in really rainy and cold Altadena, California. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Jen.
Thanks so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
So we have a lot to talk about. The first time we met, actually, we didn't actually meet, but the first time I saw you, I went to a screening of Her Story at the LGBT Center in New York City. And you screened a bunch of clips, and there were like all these people there. Like Laverne Cox was the surprise moderator. I mean, there should have been a red carpet, basically. And I got up and asked like a real earnest question about representations of women of color. And you were like, you just were like sort of like a professor. You were like, oh God, it's that student.
I thought you were an awful white feminist
at that point.
And I treated you appropriately and kind of shot down the question and then used that interaction as an example in future talks that I gave.
Yeah. So Jen and I have a long history is what I'm saying, is that we've become friends, even though she hated me but didn't know me the first time she met me.
Then when I actually met you, I didn't realize you had to tell me later
that was you that asked that question. Yeah. Okay. So for people who don't know, give me a brief synopsis of what Her Story is.
It is a 6-part web series that lives on YouTube, and it centers on the stories of two trans women who live in LA and plays out kind of the beginning of a couple love stories. One character, played by my former roommate, Angelica Ross, who's an extraordinary trans woman, plays Paige, who starts to fall for this man she meets, but doesn't immediately disclose that she's trans. And my character, Violet, is interviewed by this lesbian journalist played by my co-writer, Laura Zack. And they began a relationship, which kind of causes both of them to question their own adherence to these identity labels that they've stuck with. So it's kind of an extended meet cute. Not a whole lot happens, but it's a real kind of natural organic introduction into the lived reality of trans people and a perspective that we don't always get because, unlike most of the other trans representation we've seen, this was written, starring, directed by trans women.
Yeah. And you actually managed, it's really funny that you said it's a meet cute because you managed to pack in like a lot of stuff because yeah. Angelica's character is like this power attorney, mm-hmm. activist. And so we get to hear about kind of activism and other political issues that way. And then your character is living with a male partner when you sort of fall for
right.
Laura's character. So your partner, does your character identify as bisexual?
I mean, I do. So I guess she does.
Okay. Great. So there's a lot in there. And there's like some talk about abuse. And
yeah, it's funny because someone once listed out all the issues that we actually addressed through her story. I mean, there was, you know, divisions within LGBT community, transphobia amongst lesbians, the issue of trans women being admitted to women's shelters, domestic violence, the susceptibility of sex workers, their hesitancy to go to authorities. I mean, we did kind of cover a lot, but because it was just such an organic little part of the story, it never felt like, it wasn't like after school special. We're not trying to make these points, but those things are all part of our lived experiences as trans women.
Yeah, and I think it's in there flawlessly. I didn't think it was like an after school special, but I do think that there's a lot of meat in there. One of my favorite scenes, speaking of lesbians, is this scene where there's like a group of lesbians.
Yes.
And you kind of have kind of every possible or at least a few possible opinions about trans women from lesbians. And some of them are really awful. And some of them are like super accepting and open. And I know all those lesbians.
Yep.
like there's like a Michigan Women's Music Festival,
yep, totally.
Sort of lesbian. And there's like a women with a Y kind of lesbian. And yeah.
Yeah. That scene was, well, it was painful to write actually, because basically what I sat down and kind of wrote out my worst fears about what the women I was around would say when I actually wasn't in the room, and wrote some of what I have been told before and what I've heard, particularly things I've encountered online. And of course, you know, because of the nature of these series, our series was edited very, very tightly. So on the page, that scene was about twice as long, and they get into a lot more detail. Luckily, I wasn't in the scene, so I didn't have to sit in there and listen to them go over all these awful things. But our sound person was also a trans woman. She actually came out while we were filming, came out as a trans woman.
Whoa.
Who had to sit there in that room all day and listen over and over and over again as they said these awful things, and was just completely wrecked by the end of the day. So my heart really broke for her. The thing that kind of intrigued me the most about that is my co-writer, Laura Zack, she said when she first read that scene, she kind of thought, well, I don't think they're really like that, because she's a lesbian and her friends aren't like that. So she kind of thought lesbians aren't like that. Queer women don't say these things. And then when the series actually came out and it was being promoted by our friends at After Ellen, they got a backlash of those very types of lesbians. And Laura finally had to like encounter them. She's like, yep, the Lisas are real.
Yeah.
they're very much out there.
Absolutely.
But the thing about the Lisa character for me, you know, sometimes our audience members want to call her a TERF.
And which that's is a trans exclusionary feminist.
Radical feminist. Which is not a label that I'm personally comfortable putting on someone else. And from my perspective, Lisa is indicative of a certain attitude within, you know, queer women's circles that has a reason. You know, I think that's one of the dangers of being a writer is that I can't simply other anybody. Like I have to understand where they're coming from. Otherwise they become a two-dimensional character and there's nothing there. So like we note that Lisa works at a women's shelter. She spends her days, you know, kind of defending and lifting up these women who are often there because of men.
Mm-hmm.
So she has this kind of blind spot when it comes to trans women because she conflates them with men. But her attitude isn't just because she hates trans women. It's because she wants to protect women. So it's like there's an error in her thinking, but it doesn't mean she's necessarily a bad person. And one of the kind of subtle visual things that Sydney, our director, did, which I really love, the last time we see Lisa, she's literally at the table with the other characters. So she's like still part of the conversation. Like I didn't want to exclude her, as opposed to like Mark, Violet's abusive boyfriend, who I do see as the actual problem. You know, when it comes down to it, Lisa and I are on separate sides of an issue, but we're in the conversation together. Whereas Violet's only hope is to actually completely get away from the abusive boyfriend. He is out of the picture.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you and Laura, who's your co-writer, also have amazing chemistry.
Yes, we do. That's what started this whole thing. We actually met on her web series. She had another web series shot in Chicago about lesbians dating in the social media age and Instagram and Twitter and all that, in Andersonville, the neighborhood I lived in. And I think I was just one of the only trans woman actors they knew of in Chicago. And there was a scene that Laura had written where she flirts with a trans waitress. And so I was cast as that waitress. And Laura and I actually met on screen. We didn't get a chance to meet off screen. So the very first time we meet is on the show. And it was just kind of fireworks. And I began flirting with her and vice versa. We got to know each other. And the real kernel of her story was me liking Laura, but being such a coward. The only way I knew how to, you know, interact with her was like, hey, do you want to work on something together? So I kind of
so is that your pickup line, Jen?
Basically. But I mean, here's the true extent of my cowardice. It's not only that, like, I went through the whole process of like writing and creating a web series in order to, you know, like kiss Laura, but I made it the very last scene of the last episode. Like, that's how much work it took me to get to kiss Laura.
And so you got to kiss Laura.
Yes.
But you're not involved with each other.
No. And unfortunately, that kiss took place at like 2 o'clock in the morning on a very cold night. And we were just kind of snotty and miserable at that point. But
that's always the sort of behind the scenes story. It's like, it looks so sweet and amazing and like this culmination of a lot of things. And yeah, the backstory is.
Exactly. Right. Now, as it turns out, a lot of the chemistry between Laura and I now is just simply that we're so much in each other's brains. It doesn't even surprise us anymore. I can't tell you how many times we've out of the blue text each other the same thing, sometimes almost word for word. We'll have the same ideas, the same responses. Even over the holidays when we were both gone from each other, you know, for a month, when we caught up last weekend, we found out that we both started to do some of the same things and had the same kinds of experiences in very different ways. But so we just have this kind of weird like twin soul connection. So it's very conducive to working together.
Yeah. And it comes across on screen. It definitely
We're also both hyper Aquarian. Like I'm a triple Aquarius. She's a double Aquarius. So it's just, you know, we are nowhere near the earth.
Okay, we got to take a commercial break. Let's hear from our sponsors, including the amazing Pleasure Chest.
I love Pleasure Chest.
See, I didn't even pay her to say that.
No, I just love it. It's great.
It's great. And we will have more with Jen Richards when we come back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off-limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more. Because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Jen Richards, and we're live if you want to call us. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. And if you're not listening live, but you want to call and leave a comment or have a question about this show or another show, you can call our 24-hour voicemail line at 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. The Pleasure Chest has one New Year's resolution for 2017 to help you have the best sex of your life. Visit their boutiques in New York, LA, and Chicago, and enjoy their free weekly workshops offered in their Pleasure Ed program. Experience sex ed in a fun, non-judgmental, and supportive environment. Whether you're improving your oral sex skills or learning the proper way to wield a whip, the Pleasure Ed program has classes for all experience levels, orientations, and interests. Not only will you learn new skills to take home, but every attendee enjoys 15% off their purchase when they come to a workshop. You can also visit pleasurechest.com for the class schedules. And while you're there, if you're shopping, use the code Tristan for a free gift with every purchase. Okay, so before the break, we were talking about her story. And this was essentially like a passion project in that you got some money, but not like no studio backing or no big, you know, angel to drop a couple million dollars on it. And then it was nominated for an Emmy.
It's so absurd. I still don't understand how that happened.
For outstanding short form comedy or drama, which is kind of amazing because it was the only
independent.
The little engine.
Oh, it was
the
like,
only independent.
It was like Comedy Central versus Lifetime versus AMC versus YouTube.
Right. So that came out of left field.
It completely came out. Well, not entirely, because they had just changed the rules earlier that year that series that only lived on YouTube were eligible mm-hmm. for Emmy nominations. So we thought, you know, what the heck? Mm-hmm. Might as well try, throw our hat in the ring. So yeah, we did. And we did like a very modest little, it's funny because there's this portal in order to vote for the Emmys, like see things and vote on it. And once you're nominated, you actually have to pay a lot of money if you want to embed clips or send out screeners or have parties. And like a lot of web series did that, you know, because they were supported. They were web series by NBC or Amazon, whatever. And they would have these lavish parties and all that. And I mean, we had none of that. We didn't have the kind of money. But we do have some friends in the industry, and we had some friends that helped us with like little marketing things, and we got the word out. But it was still a complete shock the day that they announced the nomination.
And so is your hope that her story can become a longer series?
Absolutely.
And hopefully on a network or something like Hulu or Amazon.
Yeah, absolutely. People keep asking if we're doing a season two, and we're not, because we can't afford it. Like I haven't made any money from her story. None of us have.
So I just want to be clear. You, Angelica, Laura, Zach, you didn't pay yourselves.
Angelica was paid because she was hired as an actress.
Okay.
Not much. Not what she's worth, obviously.
Okay.
The girl is amazing, and she's part of the reason this succeeded. But myself, Laura, and Kate Fisher, our producer, were the three quote-unquote producers. So, yeah, we haven't made any money from it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so now it's time for someone to step up and make the series.
Well, and not only that, Laura and I have laid out in exacting detail a full 10-30-minute episode season of her story that picks up where the web series drops off. And we've doubled the amount of characters. There's trans guys, there's non-binary people, there's more diversity. We get into some really serious issues too, that I'm so, it would be unlike anything that's ever been on television. And I really want the opportunity to tell those stories. And I think that there must be some producer out there, some network out there who's willing to take a risk on us. We're a little bit niche, but I think that our content has universal appeal. I mean, most of our audience isn't trans or queer, you know, but they just like a good love story. They like like compelling characters. And they do like an insight into a world that they don't normally have access to.
Right, right. Okay, so that brings me to my next question. The other thing that we're going to talk about today, which is...
Sex?
No.
It's a sex show. You can ask me about sex. It's fine.
No, I'm going by the script here.
I'm going to get you off the script. Okay. That's kind of what I do.
Okay. Why is trans representation so important? Let's talk about that.
I think we should talk about your boobs because... I'm an ass person personally. Like asses are what I notice, but your boobs are spectacular in that dress. You're gonna kill it tonight. They're wonderful.
I'm dressed to go out, by the way. I don't just like well, actually I do. I come to work every day, just completely decked out, cleavage, everything. Thanks.
She looks fantastic.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, trans representation.
Ah, fine. I mean it sounds hyperbolic, but I mean this, it saves lives. Good representation saves lives. I mean, the suicide rates for trans people, trans women in particular, but all trans people are astronomically high, you know, 49 times higher, than the average person. And I mean, that's just suicide. You take into account addiction, HIV, homelessness, and worst of all, the number of murders that are committed each year, you know, particularly of young trans women of color, young black and Latina trans women in this country on the front line of a battle that no one wants to take a look at. And all of these things are very complicated, largely intractable issues that sit at the intersection of so many forces that it's kind of hard to unweave them. One thing that I know I can do is I can tell stories that shine a light on places that people wouldn't otherwise see. And one good example of that is the issue that's occupied me the most over the last 5 years is the murder of trans women. I mean, the very first event that I ever went to as an out trans woman was a memorial service for Paige Clay, who Paige is named after in her story. That was Angelica's idea, who was a 23-year-old black trans woman on the south side of Chicago who was, you know, shot in the head, dumped in an alley, and no one's ever been arrested or tried or anything for it, you know. She was one of three over the couple years that I was in Chicago. And as I talk to more and more survivors of violence, you know, talk to the women who have these experiences, particularly young black trans women who are often survival sex workers, the same narrative happens over and over again, and that's straight men are attracted to trans women. But they're concerned that other people are going to think them less masculine or possibly gay for doing that. And they deal with that kind of cognitive dissonance by violently attacking the source of that dissonance, which is the woman. And so I've been looking at that issue and trying to address it. And it's really hard to because these women are in survival sex work because they're being kicked out of their homes. You know, they're being bullied in school. Their churches are turning their backs on them. There's no employment. So that it creates this really complex situation. And in addition to the ones that they encounter just as, you know, disenfranchised people of color in poor neighborhoods. But the one part that's something I could address is that stigma associated with the straight man liking a trans woman. So part of the point of her story was to show a straight man of color attracted to a black trans woman who, when he finds out she's trans, rather than responding with violence, instead models a kind of behavior that I want to put out into the world. It's not one I've seen, but it's one that I want to model, which is he admits that he also has things that he needs to disclose. And in our case, he's a gambling addict, which is a big issue and will affect a relationship. And he says, like, I'm just trying to understand. Like, I don't know when I feel like you should have told me you were trans right away. But as I think about it, I'm not sure why I'm supposed to tell you that I have a gambling problem. So I'm trying to put that like on a more level playing ground. So this is why representation matters. And the kind of representation that we get in her story wouldn't have been written by a cis writer. Even the most sympathetic, well-informed cis writer is just not going to tell these stories in the same way as those of us who have coming from inside this world, at least not right now.
Okay, that brings up another point.
Okay.
Which is, where do you stand on an issue that I think has divided the queer and trans community, which is... around now that we've had more and more representations of trans people, like we obviously have a long way to go, but we've had some. Most of them have been played by non-trans actors,
yes,
by cisgender actors. So where do you stand on trans people should always be played by trans people or not?
Well, it's funny because I mean I'm a big part of the reason that debate became like a national issue when I, you know, had the my tweets go viral about Matt Bomer being cast as a trans woman. And a lot of people conflated the issues, which I understand because it's complicated. And they think that I'm saying cis people can't play trans people and therefore gay people can't play straight, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not. I mean, my real concern, again, it goes back to the violence. My point is that when a cis man plays a trans woman, the result is violence, you know. This attitude that I spoke of earlier, where men are afraid that people are going to think they're gay or less masculine for liking a trans woman, is largely because when popular culture thinks of trans women, they think of the male actors playing them. You know, so we think of Jared Leto in a full beard accepting his Academy Award for playing Rayon, or Jeffrey Tambor, Eddie Redmayne. And this is a thing that's been going on for 40 years since Dog Day Afternoon with Al Pacino. Again and again. So that's my main concern. It's a practical one, and it's situated in our context right now. The way that things are right now, I think a cis man playing a trans woman causes violence. And I'm being very emphatic about that because I think the stakes are that high. I'm an artist. I don't believe in rules. I'm saying there's a consequence for that kind of casting, but I would never make that kind of rule. I think Eddie Redmayne did a beautiful job in The Danish Girl. He's a sweet man. He worked really hard. He's a good actor. And frankly, I mean, I want to be able to play cis people too. Like, I would not put those kind of rules. I want the best actor to do it. I do think it's, at this point, it's better when a trans actor plays a trans character. I do think they bring something special. I think it's the same true with gay actors. I can often see a straight person playing gay. Mm. And for me, the difference is, like, if I'm playing a trans woman, I'm playing her story, her character. If someone else, if a man is playing a trans woman, he's going to be playing the trans part. Like, that will be part of his acting, will be consumed by trying to look like a trans woman. Mm-hmm. Versus me, like, I don't have to deal with my gestures, my voice, my body. That's just me. And I can focus on the story. So I think it leaves, you have more room for depth and authenticity and subtlety in the performance.
Mm, that's a really good, and I think also the audience has a little bit more space to see the person as three-dimensional, because I know when I see cis men playing trans women, I'm caught up in the, why did they make that fashion choice?
Right.
Look at the boobs, they're not quite right. Why is the makeup like that? Like the guy, I don't know his name, but who played the trans woman on Sons of Anarchy.
Mm-hmm. Walter Goggins.
Which I felt like, okay, you're trying,
mm-hmm.
and there and this character finds love, and that part is, you know, is amazing and nice. But I was sort of caught up in the, like, yeah, in the sort of costuming and the performance of the gender itself, I guess.
And sometimes that's fun. I mean, part of the reason that we go to watch Daniel Day-Lewis play Stephen Hawking, or not Stephen Hawking. Or Lincoln, or, you know, the Butcher. It's because of his total transformation. Like, that's part of the skill of an actor, and I can see the joy in that. Mm-hmm. So again, I don't want to put any kind of rules on this. I mean, my character, it occurred to me because I saw my episode. I'm in the show Nashville.
Right. We're going to talk about that next. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Hold that thought. We've got to take another commercial break. She is in the show Nashville. I did get to watch her episodes right before we went on the air. Can't wait to talk about it. Okay, so let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about country music television and its first trans woman character played by a trans woman, Nashville. So stay with us.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey, everyone. It's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today I'm talking with Jen Richards. And we're live, if you want to give us a call, if you're not too sad from the inauguration, 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. I told you in the last segment about Pleasure Chest and their great free sex ed classes. Let me tell you what's coming up. In Chicago, January 25th, Pleasure Her Perfect with Tanya. February 1st, Suck It, Lick It, Love It with Antoinette, Elizabeth, and Emma. In Los Angeles, January 25th, 50 Shades of Pleasure with Victor. And February 1st is the book release party for Curvy Girl Sex by Elle Chase. I'll be there. I hope you will be too. In New York City, January 25th, Advanced Anal Play with Sloan. And February 1st, Blowjobs and Beyond with Brandon B. And I've just formed a new partnership with the Pleasure Chest. I have my own curated page of all of my favorite products. I tell you why they're my favorites and why I love them. And you can go see that page. We're going to tweet out the link to it. Remember, all those classes are free and they're from 8 to 10 p.m. Go to pleasurechest.com to see the entire schedule. So before the break, Jen mentioned she's on this tiny little show called Nashville, which stars, well, some huge, huge stars. And it recently moved to the Country Music Channel. And what's really funny is I'm a Nashville fan. When it was on ABC, I was a big fan. So of course I followed it back, you know, wherever it went. And this new season recently started, and you are playing the physical therapist of Juliet Barnes, who is one of the lead characters, played by Hayden Panettiere. You're on episodes 1, 4, and 6, and actually episode 4 just came out last night and was blowing up your Twitter feed, and I got to watch it today. So first, tell me about this experience of working on this huge show, you know, where you probably like saw Connie Britton at the catering table.
Yeah, I did. She's really gorgeous and sweet and fun. You know, I I've never seen the show Nashville. I hadn't ever seen any episodes until yesterday. I started watching this season, and I didn't know exactly what was going on.
I know, because you asked me.
Yeah, I had to ask you, like, who's this character?
What's the backstory on this? Why is she doing that? I was like, her mom.
It's kind of helped, though. Like, I often meet celebrities and don't know who they are, which I think celebrities actually kind of puts them at ease. So I wasn't totally, I mean, it was exciting to be on set and to be part of this like big kind of family, but I didn't quite walk into it with a sense of like awe because I was a big fan. However, I am falling in love with the show. I think it's great. It was super exciting. I mean, I'm from the South, you know, I'm from Mississippi. My family's in North Carolina. I love Nashville. I loved getting to go there. I love the music. I love the people. Everyone on set was great. I toured the CMT offices, and they were just really, really wonderful people. I mean, people forget that CMT is actually a sister network to Logo. Like, it's all the same company. So it's actually a very progressive place, and they're really serious about trying to show the true diversity of Nashville. And I like that my character isn't just this kind of like token trans character who's just there to be trans. And episode 4, that's the episode where I have two good scenes, and there's no mention that my character is trans.
No, at this point, you're technically not playing a trans person.
Yeah.
You're playing a physical therapist who makes a connection with Juliet, and is also seeing her at her most vulnerable, and those kind of relationships are real. You know, when we are when we're struggling and we have healthcare providers, even if those healthcare providers aren't therapists, they usually drop some wisdom on you. What's so great about the first two episodes I saw you in is like, the scenes are not revolving around you being trans, mm-hmm. or being out, being not out, you know, being stealth, blah, 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 blah. The sort of typical tropes.
Right. And that's what's exciting to me too. One of my favorite moments last night was that the Twitter handle Country Music, which has like 700,000 followers, I don't exactly know what it is, a Country Music Association, tweeted out like a picture of me and it just said, "How sweet is Juliet's nurse?" You know, it didn't have my handle. It was just because they didn't know who I was. I thought, God, to like all these country music fans, like I'm just the sweet nurse. Like they don't know me as like a trans actor and activist. Just like, oh, she's just a nurse. And you know, it will come out later that my character is trans. There'll be some talk about it. And then they'll see that like, oh, it's kind of like what I want people to realize is that we're already among you. Like we're already in the bathroom with you. I've been going to the women's bathroom in North Carolina for many years. You know, no one ever had an issue. No one ever noticed. It's just this kind of blind spot because people think they know what a trans person looks like, mm-hmm. because the way the movies have always portrayed us, you know, mm-hmm. as like men in a bad wig and bad makeup. You know, they don't realize that we're already here, we're already their colleagues, we're already on public transportation with them, we're giving them coffee, we're your lawyers, your physical therapists, like we're already here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so speaking of bathrooms, let's talk a little bit about how we've seen this new trend in more visibility for trans people on television, more representation. And yet right alongside that, we have these horrible bathroom bills. Mm-hmm. And we talked several weeks ago on the show about all the different states which have proposed legislation that is anti-trans about bathrooms and locker rooms and whatever. And it's horrifying. And like one of the states is like Washington state. I mean, there's a lot of southern states.
There's a big one right now in Washington. They're trying to fight it.
So how do you make sense of that sort of disconnect?
Well, because they're actually related. It's not a disconnect. With hypervisibility comes a concern that's related to that. All of a sudden, as trans people are in the media and it becomes a national conversation, there's that backlash of, wait, I'm not comfortable with that. Things are changing too quickly, too fast. I'm not sure I want trans people in the bathroom because they weren't aware of it up till then. Like I was already there with them, but now that it's a national conversation, they feel threatened. They feel like their safe spaces are being invaded because they don't know it was never what they thought it was in the first place. And it's also been strategic. I mean, there is a kind of small cluster of organizations that usually have something to do with family values in their title. Mm-hmm. And there is a right-wing strategy. I mean, they're very obvious about this. You can find their papers. And once gay marriage passed, they were looking for another issue that would stoke the base, that would get people to come out and vote and to donate. And they literally tested this out with
like market testing.
Absolutely. And what they found is that the specter, the notion of a male predator in a space where women feel vulnerable gets people scared. And so they crafted, it wasn't in response to any kind of issue. There was no spate of, you know, men claiming to be trans women in order to like watch someone pee.
And just to be clear, there's still no crimes ever reported of women doing anything to anyone in the bathroom.
And even if there were, it wouldn't negate the fact that that's not what, you know, that most people do. And there's already laws protecting people.
Right.
But they knew that it would get people scared. It would get them out to vote. It would get them to donate to their causes. So it was an intentional strategy. And if you look at all these different bills, they all share the same language because the language was crafted by these groups, not legislators. And so it's just part of a strategy. North Carolina was the first that it actually went through and then we saw the consequences of it. But they're going to continue hammering away at this issue.
How does that not make you feel like a target?
Well, I am a target, but I'm a mistaken target. You know, I'm not the actual target. You know, their fear is the unknown. It's a projection. You know, it's a boogeyman. That's part of the reason I was excited to be on Nashville, because here's a show that's watched by the parts of the country that are often liable to make things like this. And I mean, I go home to North Carolina, you know, and I've
You just went for the holidays.
Yeah, I was there for 3 weeks. And technically, when I get off the airplane in the airport, like, I'm supposed to use a men's room. That's a public facility. But it's absurd. And of course, you know, if I tried, I'd get chased out. And like, no one notices me in the women's room. So I'm aware of it every time there. And it made me more self-conscious. I love North Carolina. I always have. It's a beautiful state, wonderful people. That law, when it got passed, I mean, it was like a punch to the gut. I mean, I felt like I was betrayed, you know, like by my own family, by my own community, mm-hmm. like by my own state. And it made me feel less safe. And even though I'm not like clocked as a trans woman in public, if people know I'm trans in North Carolina, I'm afraid of like backlash or resentment or like me becoming an object of hate. But the truth is like we did a screening of her story in Raleigh, Durham, and my mom and 8 of her, you know, 65-year-old white, you know, Christian neighbors came out and saw it, and they loved it. And, you know, they admitted that had they not known me personally and seen her story, they might not have been on the right side of this issue. But I'll never forget one of the women, we were driving back from it. She, you know, born and raised in North Carolina. And she said, when I was a little kid, they told me that the Germans and Italians were bad, the Catholics, basically. And then I was a little bit older and blacks were the problem. And then after that, it was the gays. And now they're telling me it's the trans people. She's like, I'm done with all of it. It's all bullshit. You know, it's just that everyone's constantly trying to find an other to blame our problems on. Mm-hmm. And right now in North Carolina, you know, it's me. But that just makes me want to be louder. You know, that just makes me want to stand up and shout, like, I'm here. I'm not a threat. I'm already with you. And this is just a mistake. And you just need to get to know me, and then this problem will go away.
We've got a question from Alexia on Twitter, who wants to know what other creative projects you're working on right now, as if this isn't enough, like trying to get her story made and doing Nashville. But what else are you doing?
I'm a compulsive writer. I mean, I've outlined about 45 films now and 3 TV series. I can't go for a walk or take a shower without coming up with a whole new story. It would take me the rest of my life to write out the ideas I already have, and they won't stop coming. I don't understand writer's block. I don't understand like looking for something. Like, I have too many. I tried to, my writing agent said, okay, like send me all your ideas. And I got 1/3 through and she goes, stop. I can't take anymore. Like, let's just pick a couple to look at from the start.
Right.
So my focus right now, in addition to her story, is a feature called Any Given Week that I just finished a second draft of, that is 1 week in the lives of 3 trans women in Chicago, a white trans woman who is stealth and lives with her black boyfriend, and they both like kind of come out to each other's like worlds, about him dating a trans woman, about her dating a black man. And then another character that's also based on Angelica Ross, again, because she's my muse, who plays this black trans woman, activist, entrepreneur in Chicago, who meets a man who turns out to be a trans man and realizes that she has some biases about dating trans people. And then this third character, who's a Latina trans woman, who's a lesbian and in relationship with a cis woman who is a DJ and very cool, but you find out has a drug addiction. And so it just kind of plays out their story over the course of a week. So I'm really happy with that. I just finished the new draft, so I'm just starting to send it out now and see what people think and try to get it out there. I'd really love to get it made. I also have another TV series, which I'm really excited about, which is about, it's really complicated and gothic, but it's basically about a trans woman killer, single mother who returns to North Carolina to take revenge on the white supremacist religious cult that raised her.
Oh, I want to see that. Yeah, I want to see that show.
It is so complicated and layered, and it's really all about change, like this whole notion of how much can we change and how much can a state change? Like, how much can people change? Mm. So it's kind of set in like one of the cities in North Carolina, the New South, which kind of pats itself on being so progressive, yet still has all these kind of corrosive undercurrents. And likewise, I mean, she's a killer who is now a single mother. Like, how much
is
can she
like
really
a contract
change?
Killer? Is she like, what do you mean she's a killer?
Yeah, she's a contract
so
killer.
She kills people.
She was raised as a mercenary within a white supremacist religious cult that's involved with underground activities in North Carolina, falls in love with a black trans man, has a child. Like, the trans man has a trans woman's child.
Right.
I don't want to spoil it. That's already too much.
That's it. Okay.
So, those are a couple. I have a horror story. I mean, Lots. Okay. Lots.
We're going to take another commercial break, but the answer to your question, Alexia, apparently is a lot. When we come back, maybe Jen will get me to talk about sex.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, so stay with us. More to come.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, do you want to see me live and in person? Maybe some of you do. February 4th to the 5th, I'm going to be at Sexual Health Expo Los Angeles. It's a Saturday and a Sunday. There's a ton of great presenters. I'm presenting anal sex on Sunday, but on Saturday is the keynote speaker, Dr. Ruth Westheimer, a legend. So you guys should check that out. February 10th, I'm going to be in New York City at the Pleasure Chest, just in time for Valentine's Day, teaching kinky sex for couples. That's a new workshop of mine. Hope to see some of you there. And I will be spending the actual Valentine's Day, February 14th, with the awesome students at Bucknell University. So that's my February, folks. I've been talking today with Jen Richards, who is a writer, producer, actress, consultant, advocate, activist, badass. Okay, so... we're going to the Women's March tomorrow.
Yes, we are. Yes.
I thought maybe you'd give us an exclusive.
Okay.
And tell us what your sign is going to say.
Well, I haven't actually made it yet, but what I'm leaning towards is Jesus was a feminist. And then like a little asterisk at the bottom, you know, he also wanted to overtopple the existing government and redistribute wealth and loved sex workers. And I might also do Jesus loves sex workers too. Mm. So yeah, I don't know. That's what I'm leaning towards. I've been reading a lot of Christianity lately, which is kind of a weird new out of the left field thing for me.
Okay.
So just kind of where my head is at.
I mean, were you raised in the church?
No, not at all.
Not at all. Mm-mm. Okay. So this Jesus stuff is new.
It's totally new.
Okay. So from Jesus to sex. That's the segue, people. That's the segue, which makes perfect sense. Well, first of all, Trans 101 states that cis people should not ask trans people about sex.
Oh, really?
It's totally like inappropriate. You know what I mean? Like we're obsessed with asking people about their genitals and about their surgeries and about how do you have sex.
On a podcast about sex, I think that's because like I also don't want to be de-sexed, you know?
Oh,
that's okay. The problem with trans women, particularly. They're either hypersexed or de-sexed. You know, there's very rarely any middle ground.
There isn't a middle ground.
Yeah.
What do you think people most don't understand about trans women and their sexualities?
That my male partners are straight. That is absolutely the biggest thing. And it causes so many issues. I would say I've had sex with a lot of men. I mean, like a ridiculous number of men.
We should compare. We should see. Okay. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, and I'd say about 99% of them have been straight. And when I say straight, I mean, not just that they say they're straight, but no, I mean, like they're not attracted to men. They're only attracted to women. And those women include trans women, you know?
Yeah. So, it makes perfect sense to me, but I see what you're saying. People can't wrap their heads around it.
Yeah, exactly. They really can't. And there's just this kind of assumption of like, well, but if, you know, you're not really all these things because they so equate genitals, you know, with sexual orientation. And the fact is you're not attracted to, you might enjoy genitals of one kind or another, and you might enjoy them like on a cis body, but it doesn't make you gay if you enjoy a penis on a woman. It just doesn't. Like, if you're attracted to a woman as a woman and not men, then that's what it's about.
Yeah.
And it's funny because whenever I flip the tables, like on this conversation, like I'll point to a picture of a trans guy and say, okay, well, he has a pussy. Are you attracted to him? No, that'd be so gay. Like, well, it's the same fucking thing, you know?
They just, right.
So that's the thing that
when
drives
you,
me
okay,
crazy.
So when you ask straight cis men, if they're attracted to someone with a pussy, right?
And right.
So, like for example, Buck Angel.
Yeah, exactly.
They are like, no, my God, that's gay.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Buck Angel's a dude.
Right.
Right.
So, and the men who sleep with me say like, yeah, I like women. I see you as a woman.
Yeah.
But they're scared, again, what other men would think. I mean, the truth of the matter is, and like, this is their problem, you know, but their problem has consequences for us.
Right.
But if every straight man in this country, in the world, who hires trans escorts, who watches trans porn, who, you know, finds trans women on Craigslist or dates, whatever, would just stand up and say, I'm a straight man who likes trans women, and that's okay. Like, so many of our issues would go away. But they're cowards, you know? They're cowards. They're cowards. And it drives me freaking bonkers.
Well, and it's like an intersection of sexism, homophobia, misogyny, toxic masculinity. Yep. It's sort of like all those things.
Yeah.
And also just shame, right? I mean, so much of the things we talk about on this show come down to sexual shame.
Absolutely. I'm reading Brené Brown right now, so I'm all about the shame conversation.
Okay, you're all about the shame conversation. Great. No, but it really does, is that people are shamed for their desires. Mm-hmm. They're shamed for the kind of pleasure they like. They're shamed for the kind of people they're attracted to. Whenever it falls kind of outside a very narrow definition.
I mean, it's funny, but the definition is only narrow because people don't talk about it. I mean, if I once did a study of the women on Eros sites, which is like one of the higher end escorting sites.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I looked at all the major markets in the United States and some in Europe, and anywhere from 15% to 25% of the escorts in any given market were trans. So we were like a quarter of the escorts, even though we're like 0.1% of the population.
Right.
Which means there's an incredible demand for it, but it's also there's an incredible need to keep that demand out of sight and controllable. And likewise with...
And transactional.
Exactly.
Right.
And likewise with pornography. Like, trans women are a huge part of porn. So there's this incredible interest there, but it's all just not talked about. Like, I kind of think that like half of all men, straight men, are into trans women and none of them will say it. And I think all it's going to take, and we've been saying this for years. I mean, Janet Mock said it before I did. All it's going to take is like one big straight male celebrity to just say, yeah, my girlfriend's trans, deal with it. That's all it's going to take. Like a big, like a straight man who other men look up to, you know, like a masculine straight guy, an athlete, a movie star, someone like that. Mm-hmm. Once they openly date a trans woman, say, yeah, my girlfriend's trans, so what? That's all, that'll change everything.
I hope we're headed there. I mean, I really fucking hope we're headed there.
Well, I mean, how many times can these guys just say like, oh, I was giving her a ride home or I didn't know, like all these like bullshit excuses.
Right.
I mean, we all know that Hugh Grant, Eddie Murphy, like all these guys were into trans women. Like trans women know that very well. Charlie Sheen.
Bridget, like, one of the Hugh Hefner ex-girlfriends, her husband.
Right. Yeah. It's super common. I mean, it's so freaking common, but they all lie about it. So that's the number one thing. That's what I'm kind of obsessed about.
Yeah. And also, but also one of the things that you have in her story, which I think is important too, is I feel like everyone's really obsessed with trans women also, and the men that sleep with them, but also I feel like there's this invisibility around queer trans women.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. 'Cause like, it's funny because straight trans women will say it feels like everyone focuses on the queer ones, and queer ones will say everyone focuses on the straight ones.
Okay, that's fair.
But to be fair, like the most visible media people have tended to be like straight feminine trans women, because mm-hmm. we live in a misogynistic capitalist culture where femininity is an object of consumption. Mm-hmm. So that's why we get that kind of attention. It's part of, you know, it's part of the system. But yeah, I mean, there's, I think, I can't remember what the numbers actually are, but it's fairly split between straight, gay, and bisexual amongst trans women. You know, I'm bisexual myself. I mostly have sex with men because that's who hits on me and they're easy. But, you know, they're just easy. Like, I, you know, they're disposable.
sorry, guys. I didn't say it.
It's true. It's true. I mean, hey, if they'd step up their game, it'd be different. But, you know, I get hit on by a lot of lesbian women, too. And I've been on dates with lesbian women, and I find out, because I kind of had this, my own problem, like this default assumption, like, well, you probably dated men before, you're bi or something like that. But I've been with lesbian women who have never been with a man, who have never touched a penis, whatever, and they don't even think twice about dating me. It's like a non-issue. I've been astonished at how much a non-issue it has been for cis women.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, but I think things are shifting. You know, when you see these statistics about, like, you know, people under 18 and how they talk about gender and how they identify their sexuality, and everything is like fluid.
Oh my God, I'm a dinosaur compared to most, you know, like I'm a feminine presenting trans woman who dates men. Like, I am like so archaic compared to these kids who their gender and sexual orientation shifts from like moment to moment in a way that is so expressive and genuine and joyful and exuberant and creative. I'm in awe of everyone like under 25. I just think they're going to save us all.
I hope they're going to save us. We need a lot of saving, especially right now.
Yeah. Hey, it's time for us to work. That's all this is saying.
It's time for us to work. Well, I am really looking forward to the Women's March tomorrow. I hope you're all going to be at your Women's Marches wherever you are, or you're going to be in solidarity with the people marching. Thanks, Jen Richards, for being on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I love your house, by the way.
Oh, she's at the studios. Okay, so let me tell you how to find Jen Richards. Jen Richards is a writer, actress, consultant, advocate, and you can see her in Her Story, which is on YouTube, and you can also see her on this season of Nashville on CMT, which also airs episodes the next day on Hulu. Find out more about her and hire her and give her money to make all the movies she wants to at smartassjen.com. Follow her on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr at smartassjen. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible: executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. My guests will be the women behind Afrosexology. I met them and attended one of their workshops at Sex Down South, and it changed my life. And you are going to just love them. Until then, you can get me on facebook.com/asktristan. You can get me on Twitter and on Instagram at Tristan Taramino. The show's on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. And in the meantime, I will see you on the streets tomorrow, the streets of Los Angeles. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.